www.forthearts.org.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up today, we're going to hear Florida This Week. A little bit later on, we're going to talk about the proposal to reduce the State Department staff. That's a part of the budget plan that was reached earlier this year, and it's causing some concern among people who think that the U.S. is cutting back on diplomacy. We'll talk about that in the second part of today's program, and later on in the program, we'll open up the phone lines, too. But first, one listener comment about last Friday's program. Last Friday, we spent much of the program talking about the separation of parents and children at the U.S. southern border as people come to the U.S. from places like Honduras and Guatemala, where violence is really heavy. And here's what one listener had to say following Friday's show.
This is Trace in St. Pete. Sarah Sanders and the guy in the White House need to go back to high school and take a government class. The Democrats cannot make any policy because they are not the majority. And if they were the majority, children would not be taken from their parents at the border. If they think it's that easy, all the Democrats in the Senate should write it on a Chuck Schumer should write it on a piece of paper and say, stop taking children from their parents at the border, and everybody sign it. Same thing in the House. Go to the president and say, here, policy change. Really easy, right? And then we'll just sit back and wait for all the Republicans' heads to explode.
There you have a listener comment that came in after last Friday's program. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Coming up next, we're going to hear Florida This Week, which is a panel discussion program that airs Friday nights on WEDU-TV. And before we do that, we're just $1,000 away from reaching the goal for the WMNF fund drive, for the summer fund drive. And if you can make a contribution right now, you're going to be one of those heroes that puts us over the top in the next hour or two or three. You can make your contribution online. Go to WMNF.org and make your contribution there. And this listener-supported radio station will be there because of your donation. So again, you can make your contribution online and help us go over that last $1,000 that we need to raise for the summer here at WMNF. Well, let's listen to Florida This Week from this past Friday night. And as you listen to it, you can always email us in the studio about your thoughts. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. Coming up next, big spending by Rick Scott on TV ads may be having an impact on his Senate campaign against Bill Nelson. Democratic candidates for governor hold two debates and agree on many progressive issues. Adam Putnam says there are no problems related to his office's mishandling of concealed weapons permit applications. And the number of mass shootings in Florida since the Pulse massacre now stands at 51. Political Insights next on Florida This Week.
From the WEDU studios, this is Florida This Week. And now, moderator Rob Lori.
Welcome back. This week our panelists are Dan Ruth is a columnist for the Tampa Bay Times. Chris Ingram is a commentator and host on AM 820 News and Bay News 9. Rita Ferrandino is the founder and CEO of ARC Capital and a Democrat. And Paula Dockery is a former state legislator, a columnist, and currently not affiliated with any political party. Well, it's great to have you here. Well, several new polls out this week give Rick Scott the lead over Bill Nelson in the race for U.S. Senate.
One of the polls, sponsored by the Florida Chamber of Commerce, of likely voters has Republican Scott up by 3% over incumbent Democrat Nelson. Another poll by St. Leo University shows Scott up by 5%. The better poll numbers for the challenger come after Scott and his allies have spent at least $17 million on TV ads, the latest of which compares Nelson to a Ford Pinto.
The Ford Pinto was the best-selling small car in America. Gas was 63 cents a gallon, and Bill Nelson was elected to Congress. 40 years later, a lot of things changed, but Bill Nelson is still in Washington, still collecting a paycheck. And besides reading speeches, what's Nelson done all those years? 349 times he's voted for higher taxes. Isn't a half century in Washington enough?
While Scott is busily trying to paint a negative picture of Bill Nelson, Nelson has spent far less on his TV ads, only about $3 million so far. Perhaps waiting until after Labor Day, conventional wisdom is that voters are not yet paying attention to the candidates and the issues. But with Scott's rising poll numbers, Nelson might be having second thoughts.
Okay, so Dan, do you think all the ads that have been run against Nelson are working? A few months ago, Nelson was ahead in the polls.
Well, I don't need to remind these grizzled veterans of our political culture here in Florida that, you know, money buys a lot of name recognition, and it buys a lot of influence, and Rick Scott has never been shy about spending tons of money to get his name out there. And I think the point you made in your lead-in is probably the salient one, that Nelson is probably waiting until right after Labor Day when people start focusing on the election more intently, and plus he doesn't have the money that Scott has. There's some PAC money out there, I suppose, that's helping.
But is it wise to wait until after Labor Day?
That's a tough question, and probably not. He probably needs to be a little bit more aggressive prior to Labor Day to kind of balance things out. But you know, you can only play with the money that you have at hand, and I think he's banking on the fact that he's been an able senator for the state of Florida and untainted. He's never had to take the Fifth Amendment, and that alone is a selling point.
Anybody here have a Pinto? Well, you know, nobody. So, Chris, what do you think? I mean, these ads seem to be working, the ones that Governor Scott's running.
They're absolutely working, and, you know, the traditional train of thought that you wait until after Labor Day, that's out the door. We have a non-traditional candidate in Rick Scott, and he has a bank of money, and he's going to spend it. And, you know, Bill Nelson, despite his 40 years in public office, he's pretty much a blank canvas from the standpoint of you can't really define him. And the fact that he's actually running ads that just further compound the only thing that anybody knows about him, that he's this congressman who went into outer space, there ought to be something more for him to be touting about his own record and accomplishment, and he can't. And the fact that Rick Scott has the money to go out and define Bill Nelson early and portray him as this guy that's just a fixture of Washington for 40 years is going to be a very effective strategy for Rick Scott. And I think that Bill Nelson, in facing Rick Scott, is going to be taking on the challenger that is, for the first time in his career, going to give him a run for his money.
All right. So, Paula, is there a danger that Bill Nelson is already being painted as a career politician,
okay,
and that's going to stick?
So Rick Scott's run for office twice. He's won twice. Neither time he's hit 50%. He had 48-point-something% one time and 49% the other time. Three things elect Rick Scott. Money, his consultant, Fabrizio, and the loyalty of Republicans who will get out to vote. What is left to know about this general election cycle is, will the Democrats turn out? If the Democrats turn out, yeah, Bill Nelson will be fine.
Exactly.
Bill Nelson cannot spend money he does not have. Republicans always have a huge advantage. But keep something else in mind. Most people can't tell you who their congressman is. Not even their U.S. senator, but people know who their governor is. Mm-hmm. So Scott enters this race, maybe not as the incumbent U.S. senator, but certainly as the governor who has the opportunity to be on TV all the time.
And a governor with some baggage.
With a lot of baggage. Now, I think that it
Which
would be...
Which has never worked in a political campaign.
Yes, I think it would be smart for Bill Nelson not to focus so much on the Medicare fraud, even though a $1 billion fine on Medicare fraud is a huge issue and should be a huge issue, because that's kind of baked into the cake. They should focus on the things that Rick Scott says he has done that he has not done. There's a similarity between Rick Scott and Donald Trump, and that is they both abide by the philosophy that you take credit for everything, even if you had nothing to do with it.
And you
take no responsibility for that which is your fault. So I think that Nelson has the opportunity to point out a lot of the things that Rick Scott has taken credit for, when in fact there are a lot of things that he needs to take the blame for. So I think Nelson has a great opportunity when he does have the money to spend it.
I think we're pleased. Rick Scott spent $17 million and he's up 3 points. That goes to show you how vulnerable Rick Scott really is, and that they're putting this kind of money in with almost basically no movement just to try to pull even. So I think what I'm really excited about is that this is going to leave a pretty good slate for Bill Bill Nelson to be able to come in and start hammering Rick Scott on what he's been doing, especially these ties to Donald Trump. So I think it's going to be a really fun race.
It is, but he's going to have to spend his money well.
He's going to have to have the right message.
Scott has turned him about eight points now. It's not just three. It's about 8 points
from where he was a few months ago.
And the other thing that you need to think about, don't dismiss, as much as you might want to, that Rick Scott is not really a good candidate. I mean, he's not textbook, but he's got that money, he's got the good consultants, and he's also running against a guy who's always run against B-rate JV candidates, including Ireland, Catherine Harris, Bill McCollum, and Connie Mack IV. He's never had a really top-tier candidate to run against.
And Chris,
and this is the first time that Nelson's going
to
face a serious challenge.
I never count Bill Nelson out.
That's right.
Never count Bill Nelson out.
Nelson should challenge Scott to a push-up contest.
Okay, so the governor not only has the Medicare fraud problem in his background, Alex Sink tried to use it, didn't work a few years ago in the first race for governor, but there are campaign finance issues that are coming up, financial disclosure issues that the governor's not revealed everything about his personal finances. That's coming up in the next few months.
His wealth has grown, since he's been in office.
But can Nelson use Scott's financial, kind of murky financial picture and the Medicare fraud, can he use that in an ad,
he's the political consultant down here at the end of the table, and a good political consultant will figure out a way to concisely explain that issue to the voters in an effective way.
But the problem is nobody cares about those issues, and the question of Rick Scott and his integrity has been tried twice statewide, and it doesn't work. Fact is that he's done a good job managing the state. You can question his numbers, you can question the types of jobs that he's created, but the fact of the matter is he can stand there with a straight face and say, I've done a lot to increase jobs in the state of Florida.
Nelson can hang how he handled the hurricane. There's many things that that Rick Scott has done just recently in the last...
He did a good job.
Well, perhaps you didn't just read about the fact that he gave pay-for-play contracts out to people instead of using the contracts we already had.
The dead senior citizens.
The debris removal. Can't blame that on the governor.
But here's what you can talk about the governor's record. His very first budget, he cut $1.3 billion out of public education. He ignored the voters' will on Amendment 1. He has fought things in the court system that the taxpayers have had to fight for. He fights what the voters wanted with their tax dollars.
All right, I'm going to be the political consultant that Dan referred to earlier. I'm going to tell you guys how Bill Nelson beats Rick Scott, because I was so annoyed and incensed with Rick Scott when this beach ban bill came out. And we can sit here and argue the merits of, is it legit? Is it really going to affect anything or not? But he should run a very populist campaign against Rick Scott as this rich outsider with a big mansion on the beach in Naples who wants to keep the little guy from going and enjoying Florida's most precious resource, the public beaches.
He signed it, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, do people think that Nelson could pull this out? Or
I think he can.
Absolutely.
Okay, but you don't think so?
I don't think so. I think Rick Scott will take that seat. Rita?
Well, of course, it'll be Bill Nelson.
Okay.
I think we also need to see what's happening with Trump at that particular moment in time.
Well, the other issue I think that's going to be big, and you could see it in Nelson's ad, is Social Security. I mean, there are issues regarding the future of Social Security. That's going to come up in the next Congress.
That's out of the Democrats' playbook going back five generations.
Right.
And if that's all that Bill Nelson has to offer voters of this state and comparing him against Rick Scott's a shoo-in.
Again, it goes back to what Paula said. This election is all going to be, are the Democrats going to turn out in the big wave, and where are the others who are a large percentage of our Florida voting bloc going to break?
And that's
going to be who's going to decide the election.
The influx of Puerto Ricans into the I-4 corridor, I think, will also be an important
question. Is will they vote?
Well, I hope so.
And health care is going to be more topical than the Social Security issue.
Okay. Well, four of the Democratic candidates for governor debated twice in the past week.
The second debate in South Florida was largely a polite affair in which Andrew Gillum, Gwen Graham, Chris King, and Phil Levine all took progressive stands on issues like guns, climate change, and education.
When I'm governor, I'm going to make sure that this college community, community colleges and state colleges have the resources that you need to pay teachers what they deserve, faculty what they deserve, and to give those students who are coming out of 12th grade an opportunity to go to one of these gyms, continue their education, and keep their debt low.
We know that if they graduate with an AA degree from schools like yours at Broward, they on average make $10,500 more. But the problem is 2 out of every 3 of those students don't graduate because they have to do 2 and 3 jobs to get through.
These are attacks that year after year after year, the governor has shown he's had no priority for our community college system. Every year, practically during his administration, he's diverted more and more money away from it.
My belief is we need to make sure everybody can go to college because we have no idea who the next Einstein is in any of our schools.
Meantime, a new Democrat got in the race, South Florida billionaire Jeff Green. He did not participate in the televised debates, but he's been traveling the state saying that he'd like to follow New Jersey's model for improving education and that he's willing to spend whatever it takes to become the next governor, perhaps as much as $200 million of his personal fortune.
So, Chris, this last debate was pretty polite. They didn't really disagree. They all agreed on climate change, guns, teacher pay, education.
I was waiting for Karl Marx to fall out of their pockets. And, you know, the liberalism was on full display here, progressive liberalism. But at the end of the day, I think that these candidates, there's not a whole lot of difference between any of them. And they're not really doing themselves a service by running so far to the left because it's going to come back and haunt them in November. The candidate who's out there that I think is doing it right at this point is Green, as much as he's not participating in this debate, not setting himself up for saying something that he's going to later regret. He's got the money to get out there and get on TV in our huge state. I think he's a guy that the Democratic Party establishment very much does not like. In fact, they probably loathe. But he's probably the candidate that could give the most challenge to whatever the Republican, whoever the Republican is in November, not any one of these other progressives on stage that we saw at this debate last week.
All right, Rita, if you talk about teacher pay, if you talk about low-cost college or reducing college debt, you're a Marxist. Is that what
I think that is
point.
Just what he said. There's so much I want to just
We're
talk
just
to you about
fun
that.
Here.
First of all, the Democratic slate, the 3 of the 4 of the people that are running are definitely pretty much all in alignment, and they are more progressive. And what we're going to see is that when we come out of the primary with one winner, we're going to be able to all get behind that person because there isn't going to be this whole Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton mess of people are all pretty much in alignment and can get behind whoever. So that's the first thing. The second thing is I was here when Jeff Green, the billionaire, ran for the U.S. Senate, and this is the same exact strategy used when he ran for the Senate. Came in at the last minute, came in, I've got $1 billion, I'm going to spend whatever it takes, and he landed flat. And that's because it's pretty much, you know, we're almost at the primary, and Jeff Green has a lot of ground to make up, and a primary and primary voters, there's a lot of relationships that people build on, and I just don't see Jeff Green going anywhere. And he hasn't reached out to me, and I was there the first time he ran, and so I just don't think there's anything that's going to happen with Jeff Green.
All right, so too late for Jeff Green to get in, do you think, Paula?
I don't think Jeff Green's going to be a factor.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate for the Democrats that there are so many candidates in the race, but on the other hand, it's not going to take much of a percentage for the person to win. I think the Democrats have some good candidates, and I think it's in the end it's going to come down to Gwen Graham or
Phil Levine. Yeah. And Phil Levine's pulled ahead pretty significantly in the polls. I mean, he's got 8-9 points now up on.
I agree.
On Gwen.
I mean, he has a lot of money, and we know a lot of money can buy a lot of airtime. But we are so close to the primary that I'm not sure he can make up that difference just with putting a bunch of.
What do you think of Chris's point that by championing these issues, the Democrats are painting themselves in a progressive corner? In November, these won't be popular issues.
Oh my God! I mean, everybody knows that you run to the extreme of your party to get the nomination, then you come back to the center for the general election.
But is teacher pay extreme?
No, I don't think teacher pay is extreme at all. And I don't think gun control is extreme. And I don't think climate change is extreme.
I'm
a resident of this state, and I'm against dead people.
I think they're actually popular issues. I think the polling would show you that the majority of Floridians support those positions.
Chris, what would you say?
In November.
Okay. Well, Florida Democrats put out a new ad this week criticizing Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam over his agency's failure to properly screen hundreds of concealed weapons permit applications.
And the longtime politician is now facing calls from Democrats to resign and drop out of his campaign for governor because of the year-long lapse at his department.
Putnam has repeatedly declared himself a, quote, proud NRA sellout, end quote.
Commissioner of Agriculture and Republican gubernatorial candidate Adam Putnam now responding to allegations that he did not protect Floridians.
Hundreds of people, perhaps very dangerous people, getting permits that should have been denied them.
From February 2016 all the way to March 2017, the department failed to do proper background checks on concealed weapon carry permit applications.
Putnam says the public was not put at risk by the mistake, saying the permit is not a requirement to buy a gun just to carry a concealed weapon in public. Putnam is running against East Coast Congressman Ron DeSantis for the Republican gubernatorial nomination.
Okay, so Rita, Putnam says nobody was put at risk. It was a mistake. He fixed it, and let's move on.
Over a year? 13 months we allowed this egregious mistake to occur. So I think Adam Putnam has built a reputation over the years as being a moderate and as a competent manager. And I don't know what he is doing in this election, because as far as being a moderate, he's running ads that are deeply insulting to people in the middle. And I mean, he has put himself right in, you know, the crosshairs of being
a liberal elite.
I'm insulted by that.
Because he's complained about the liberal
elites. The moderate piece is gone. He has painted himself right out of that. And he always has been known as a competent manager. I think people in the state have respected him as a manager. So I think this has opened him up to some really serious trouble in the general if he makes it that far.
He's gone from being Opie to Chucky. And it's a mysterious transformation.
That's your point. You've got to run to the right if you're running in the Republican
and
primary.
One of the real scandals here too is, why is the Department of Agriculture approving gun permits in the first place? Well, we had a story about this earlier this week, and this is purely the product of Marion Hammer, who got
the NRA lobbyist in Tallahassee,
who manipulated. You may have been in the legislature when this occurred. If the FDLE should be doing these checks, or the Attorney General,
Agriculture Commissioner.
Paula, in full disclosure, Adam Putnam's a good friend of mine. We went into the legislature at the same time, but I want to clear something up. Adam has never been a moderate. Adam has always been a conservative. As the Republican Party moved further and further and further and further to the right, so far that I can't relate to them anymore, Adam moved with them, just not to the very far extreme. So
Until now, anybody
who calls Adam anything other than a conservative is that's wishful thinking on their part. Ironically, this issue will help him in the primary. It puts him and the NRA together.
As the Democrats beat him up, it's going to help him.
But in the general, if it has staying power, it could hurt.
Yeah, that's really the salient point right there. Does it have staying power? I mean, you could argue this really has not been a good couple of weeks for Adam Putnam. I think that he already had that conservative base that you now say is now so solidified for him because of this issue. Yeah, but the downside of what the Democrats can do to you on this issue in November is not good for Adam Putnam. And if he could rewind the last 10 days, I'm sure he would.
Okay. Well, this week marked the second anniversary of the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando, in which 49 people were gunned down.
This week also saw another gun tragedy. A deranged gunman in Orlando killed 4 children and himself and wounded a police officer after barricading himself in an apartment. No doubt Florida has a serious gun violence problem. As reported by the Orlando Weekly and the Gun Violence Archive, Florida's had 51 mass shootings since the Pulse massacre 2 years ago. A mass shooting is defined as 4 or more people shot and or killed in a single event, not including the shooter. In those 51 incidents, a total of 118 people have been killed and 280 were injured. As a country, we're now averaging 96 deaths a day from gunfire. That's equal to nearly 2 Pulse massacres every day. Americans make up only 4.4% of the global population, while we own 42% of all the world's guns.
So, Paula, did we learn any lessons from Pulse?
No. And if we did, those in charge of changing policy didn't do anything about it. But I think what's happened now, every mass shooting is a tragedy, and everyone is very sad. The one that affected me the most was Sandy Hook. But those sweet little 4 and 5 year olds couldn't speak out for themselves. When the tragedy happened at Stoneman Douglas High School here in Florida, in South Florida, those kids did speak out, and they spoke out very articulately, and they were extremely effective. I actually see some change now in the standing of the NRA nationally. And so I think that at this election cycle, those articulate teenagers who are now combining with other teens across the state who have witnessed what being involved in a mass shooting, what it does to you, I think they're going to be tremendous assets for gun issues. And yes, we do have a problem in Florida. I love the Second Amendment. I own a gun. Everybody in my family is either a hunter or was in the military. But we have a problem. We need to address it.
All right. So, Chris, if you're associated with the NRA, is that going to be a bad thing for a candidate in November?
Well, it depends. You know, if the media gets a hold of that and start running stories about you, and we see protesters at Publix, and I think they're calling for a boycott of Disney World now because they supported candidates like Adam Putnam, right, who is supportive of the NRA, then that's not such a good thing. But I think really the framing of this whole gun control Second Amendment issue is missing an important element, and that is that it's not just about gun control. It's a large part about our society, the civility or lack thereof, the lack of discipline in our homes that then translates into lack of discipline in our schools. And these kids grow up and they're people in our communities that are not necessarily civil and decent. And we need to return to that. And that there's no bumper sticker solution. The politicians can just slap on and say, hey, we fixed something. It's going to take a long time. We've got to address it. But first, we have to recognize the problem before we can address the solution.
And the problem doesn't end. I mean, I agree with all that. But it's the gun. Ultimately, it's the gun and the easy accessibility of the gun. We can deal with the family issues, the sociological issues, the domestic issues. We have to deal with the gun.
All right. And we have to have better role models, like in the White House, that will talk to the issue of bullying and not show us by example. Yes.
Before we go, what other news story should we be paying attention to? Let's start with you, Chris.
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily a news story, but I was in Cuba last week. I'd never been down there. I went with my wife, had a nice time for about 6 days. And I came back after having seen on television down there in Cuba, you can get CNN, watching the North Korea summit. And I thought to myself, you know, if we can have a deal to have peace with North Korea, we certainly ought to be able to have peace. We ought to be able to have trade. We ought to be able to have free travel to Cuba among American citizens. And Donald Trump is absolutely wrong in kowtowing to the Miami Cuban interests and not having the trade and the freedom that we had under Obama. It was the one thing that Obama did that I fully supported.
Well,
and we need to go
like
back to
a liberal there, Chris. All right. Paula, your other big story.
Congressional District 15 is a race to watch. The primary is full of candidates. We have 3 Democrats and 6 Republicans, and it's a Republican plus 6 district, but open seat, very popular. Dennis Ross decided not to run again. The race is wide open. You could see a Democrat take it, depending on if Democrats turn out to vote, but even the primary is going to be pretty exciting, so watch for Congressional District 15, which happens to be part of Lakeland, Hillsboro, and a little bit of Lake.
All right, Rita, your other big story?
Well, we still have children being held at the border in, you know, inhumane ways. I just can't sleep at night thinking about what we're doing to children and why Americans are sitting around doing nothing and allowing it to happen. I think we should be just deeply ashamed at ourselves.
And Dan, your other big story.
In the early stages of the upcoming Tampa mayoral election, former police chief Jane Castor has already established a pretty substantial polling lead and fundraising lead, although David Stras can wipe that out with a single check.
Yeah, she's raised a lot of money.
She's showing some strength.
All right. Well, thank you all for a great show. Thanks for watching Florida This Week.
That was Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV, and my guests were Daniel Ruth, columnist for the Tampa Bay Times. Rita Ferrandino was the Democrat on that panel. Paula Dockery is currently registered with no political party. She's a former state senator from Polk County. And Chris Ingram is a Republican, and he's got a radio program on 820 AM. And you can see the next Florida This Week this coming Friday night at 8:30 on WEDU-TV, the PBS station in Tampa. that serves all of the west coast of Florida. Well, the State Department and the U.S. Agency for International Development face deep funding cuts under a budget deal that was worked out earlier this year in Washington that ended a government shutdown. And now lawmakers are struggling to find additional funds to plug the growing federal deficit. The funding shortfall would impose the biggest reduction in resources for the U.S. Diplomatic Corps and development programs since the 1990s. The budget squeeze coincides with declining morale at the State Department amid a controversial reorganization and the perception among foreign service officers that President Trump has sidelined diplomacy as a tool of foreign policy. The budget deal also authorizes $70 billion more for the military. We're joined now by Alex Sink, the former chief financial officer for the state of Florida and one-time candidate for governor. And for Congress, she's now in Washington, D.C., lobbying for fully funding the State Department budget in the coming fiscal year. And she joins us on the phone. Alex Sink, welcome back to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Hey, Ross.
How are you? So, what are you doing up there in Washington lobbying for the State Department?
Well, I am a part of a group called the U.S. Global Leadership Coalition, and there are probably 500 of us here from all around, from every state, almost every state, gathering annually. We will be on the Hill tomorrow. And the reason, I'm just very interested in America's place globally. And it's especially important in Florida. So there's three main areas. One is to support security and to support our military. Secondly is the economic impact of our place in the world when it comes to trade and supporting small businesses. And thirdly is for humanitarian reasons, to support education programs and health programs all around the world. It just, all these things keep our own country a lot safer, Rob.
So, Alex, how does a full component of diplomats, especially diplomats and embassies overseas, how does that help small business people here in Florida?
Well, one of the most important ways that a full complement of diplomats helped our small businesses is that in every embassy, almost every embassy around the world, an important component are representatives of the Commerce Department, and their goal and their responsibility is to promote American businesses overseas. Rob, I just returned from I'm a descendant of the original Siamese twins, and the Thailand government invited some descendants to take a trip back to the homeland. And while I was there at one of our dinners, representatives from the American Chamber of Commerce in Thailand were there. They have over 500 American businesses, are members of that Chamber of Commerce, and they are there. Solely, our State Department has the responsibility to promote and make it easier for American businesses to do business in Thailand. And that's just repeated over and over and over again all over the world. And would you believe that 60,000 Florida businesses are involved in exporting products? 60,000. They estimate about a $55 billion of exports just out of the state of Florida. So we don't want to do anything to risk that. And, in fact, we want to have good relations with these countries so that we can grow our business opportunities.
So how big is the proposed cut to the State Department budget?
Well, right now, and this happened last year as well, it was proposed to cut the State Department budget by 30%. And when I was at this conference last year, we all got busy, and it's one-on-one. It's me contacting Kathy Castor and Charlie Crist, and they asked me to contact Dennis Ross to really advocate and get these members of Congress and the U.S. senators understanding the importance of maintaining the budget. And so we were able to push back and didn't have a 30% cut last year, fortunately, but they're back at it again this year. And so that's what we're fighting hard for. It means thousands of jobs go unfilled. It means cuts to just important One of the biggest programs that the U.S. government is involved in is AIDS and HIV and AIDS prevention around the world. And seriously, Rob, millions and millions of lives have been saved around the world because of our efforts in AIDS prevention, for example.
And that's included in part in the State Department budget?
Yes, yes. Part of the USAID.
All right, so how would you describe what USAID, the U.S. Agency for International Development, what does it do, and how does that impact Floridians?
Well, USAID is looking for programs country by country to support, to actually stabilize. This is a big security issue, Rob, and I think if you talk to our military folks over at CENTCOM and SOCOM, which, as you know, we're very fortunate to have such a large military presence in Tampa. As General Mattis is quoted as saying that if we don't have an AID or an aid budget in these countries, he's going to have to just increase the budget for ammunition and guns. So stabilizing these economies when it comes to health concerns, and education concerns is critically important, because if not, they're going to have wars. We're going to be engaged in wars, and we know that means American lives are lost. So I'd rather spend a few pennies on an aid budget than have to send one of our young men and women off to some skirmish in a faraway land and risk their lives.
So spending money on the State Department or USAID helps to reduce the need to use the military overseas.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Totally. And part of our group up here among these 500 people are a lot of military people and veterans who understand the critical nature of this. I mean, the interesting thing about being here, Rob, is that the room is full of both Republicans and Democrats and independents. And this is one area, Rob, where I believe that some of the partisanship can be put aside, and we can all agree that keeping America's presence strong around the world is just absolutely critical. And fortunately, I think they're seeing that the new Secretary of State, Secretary Pompeo, is a little more inclined to support the work of the State Department. So there is some optimism about the future, for sure.
I was going to say that it would seem that if you're a business person doing business overseas, that group of people might likely, on the whole, be slightly more Republican than Democratic. I don't know if that's fair to say, but if you're trying to sell your goods overseas, you might, and you're a business person, mm-hmm. You might. I don't know. You tell me. are there more Republicans trying to do that than Democrats trying to do that?
Well, you know, you're right. I mean, but Rob, the world is upside down now. I mean, historically, it was the Republicans who were the free trade advocates. It was Republicans who were originally pushing NAFTA back in the day, and Democrats who were a little more skeptical about the free trade issues. I mean, it's Republicans who have been more supportive in general, I think, of all the things that you're talking about, foreign involvement, going and fighting wars and the part of democracy. And it's just, you know, as a Democrat, it's just stunning to me that here I am. I'm the Democrat who's out here fighting hard for America's continued involvement all around the world and advocating. You know, they have expressed some dismay about all the financing that's provided and the grants that the U.S. government has typically provided to small businesses through Ex-Im Bank credits and through development grants to help our small businesses finance the ability to sell products overseas. And this export financing is a critical part of what the U.S. government has been doing. And we have companies right in Tampa Bay that benefit from exporting. I was thinking about a company called Biology, which was started up by an individual in Tampa, and they take networking equipment and refurbish it and export it to foreign countries. And that job supports hundreds and hundreds of jobs right in Tampa. Or think about the export of phosphate all around the world. Tampa Port, the largest exporter of phosphate products out of Polk County, and we could go on and on and on. And it's just critically important that our congresspeople understand that there's no better investment than to support the State Department budget.
We're talking with Alex Sink, the former chief financial officer for the state of Florida. She's up in Washington, D.C., with a large group of people, part of the U.S. Global Leadership Coalition, lobbying on behalf of the State Department, arguing against proposed cuts to the State Department budget and the budget for USAID. So I imagine, Alex, that people can find out more at the U.S. Global Leadership Coalition website?
Yes, usglc.org. There's also a, if you add /Florida, you can see some of the statistics that are specific to our state and the impact of the economy, for example. And Rob, just what I would ask all of your listeners to do is, as they are out and about, and we're in election year, to be reinforcing and talking to our current congresspeople, Bill Arrakis and Chris and Dennis Ross and Kathy Kester and Vern Buchanan, to just mention once in a while that they support Americans' involvement abroad. And there are, as I just heard you replay the Florida this week, and I heard Paula Dockery talk about the open seat, Congressional District 15. I was at the debate that Tiger Bay sponsored last Friday with all the candidates, and they too should be aware that, you know, we have a lot of other issues, the economy, health, but it's not too hard to just slip in the fact that we support America's involvement as a world leader, and we want to maintain our leadership around the world. And part of the way we do that is by supporting the activities of our State Department.
Alex Sink, is there anything you'd like to add before we go?
I just want to add that I would just like to add, Rob, that we've got very, very important elections coming up, all the way from school board to state house to Senate to county commission, U.S. Senate race, and I'm going to spend a good part of my next several months learning about and advocating for candidates that I believe support my philosophies and support good government. And I just want your listeners to be super well informed and get active and involved in being out there campaigning and helping their favorite candidates, and being sure that we get people registered to vote, and that we have the biggest election, off-year election in Florida's history this fall.
Well, Alex, thanks a lot. You're going to be happy to know that in the next hour, Sean is going to play an hour-long portion of that debate with the candidates from Congressional District 15. So we're going to hear quite a lot about where the candidates stand on the issue in the next hour here on WMNF.
Well, thank you so much for doing that. I was just thrilled that WMNF was there. That's why I support the station financially as much as I can. And I think your listeners will be very intrigued. The contrast between the Republican candidates and the way that they are trying to out-conservative each other with the Democratic candidates is huge. It's enormous. There's no blurring of the issues, Rob, when it comes to where the Republican candidates are going to be and the Democratic candidates. So the people of my district, this is my district I live in, CD 15, are going to have a very clear choice when we get to November.
Alex Sink, thanks a lot, and thanks for your donation last week during the fund drive.
Oh, I'm thrilled to do it. I just hope everybody else is just spending $5 or $10 every month to WMNF. You're just a jewel in the cap of our community. It's very important to support WMNF.
All right. Thanks, Alex.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, Rob.
Bye. Bye-bye. That's Alex Sink, who is the former chief financial officer for the state of Florida. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And we're going to open up the phone lines and take some phone calls. Margaret wrote in earlier saying that there will be a protest against the separation of families. The protest takes place this afternoon at Williams Park from 6 to 8 p.m. This is in downtown St. Petersburg, and the Women's March of Florida is one of the sponsors of that rally this afternoon in St. Petersburg. Going from 6 to 8 o'clock at Williams Park in downtown St. Pete. Also, thanks to Anonymous for making a contribution to WMNF, helping us to close that final $1,000 gap. We are now $900 away from reaching the overall goal for our summer fund drive. Just 9 more people donating, and it will be all over. You can make your contribution at WMNF.org on our secure website. That's WMNF.org. There's a major Supreme Court decision about redistricting, and many of the headlines on the decision say that the Supreme Court really punted on the redistricting case that's before it involving a controversy in Wisconsin. We're going to get the latest on that in just about 9 minutes when we go to the NPR News, but a major Supreme Court case today, and no clear victory for either side. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Frank Knox is our phone producer today. We're going to go to John in Palmetto. John, you're on WMNF. What would you like to talk about?
Thanks, Rob. First of all, I'm glad to see that Fink hasn't lost any of her ability to speak legislature jargon. As far as her philosophy goes, I'm greatly opposed to it, as she highlighted, phosphate. We've had enough about phosphate. There's over 500,000 acres that grow nothing but invasive species throughout the center of this state. And there's thousands of acres of gypsum stacks and clay settling ponds that will be here through our and our children's and their children's lifetime. So I'm not so hot on that issue, and legislatures always reach for something they can't touch. That's called the safe zone. But this could cause about real quick. I think that it would be good for the public to really demand that Putnam just explain when he told Scott about the website being down. And how long he and Scott have known? Because when I understand from what I was told that it came. Scott knew when he announced he was going to put $500 million, which is a fraction of what the schools are going to need to bring schools safe. When all the time for months, I understood for months he had known that these gun sales were being compromised. As far as how people understood it, we need an investigation. So they need to be asked and they need to answer it. When was the first that Putnam told Scott? Scott knew, and when Putnam knew? Because it's huge. It really shows, because that $500 million will come out of the next budget. It won't come out of Scott's budget. He just said that he was willing to say anything. But it shows them both for the liar manipulators they are. And I thank you so much for being here, and this morning was a great show.
All right, John, thanks a lot. 813-239-9663. I know what John's saying about phosphate, because certainly I think a lot of environmentalists and people are concerned about water quality and the future of, you know, what do you do with those giant mounds that dot the Florida landscape? What's going to happen with those in future generations? And I think Sink's point is that they're going to cut the diplomatic corps at the State Department maybe by 30% if the budget deal numbers go through. So then, does the U.S. have to rely more on military power, or does it have to rely more on diplomacy? Well, if you're cutting back the diplomatic corps, it's going to obviously rely less on the diplomatic power abroad. You know, I think there may be positions where maybe if you went through the State Department and looked for people that weren't working very hard, maybe you'd find some. I think the same might be true for the military, too, that if you went through the military and looked for people that weren't working very hard or where money was wasted, you might find problems in the military. In fact, my guess is that the problems of wasted money in the military would be far, far higher than the wasted money in the State Department. So we could talk about that if you want. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Mike writes, I'm not sure what he's referring to, but Mike writes, David Hogg for president, talking about one of the student leaders from Parkland High School. And Mike I guess, woke up and felt strongly about David Hogg, so decided to send us that email. And then in the last hour, we were there was a lot of discussion about ticks. So here's Cynthia writing. She says, if you pour turpentine oil and you touch a tick with a cotton swab, I guess pure turpentine oil, if you rub it on a cotton swab and then touch the tick will come right out, suggests Cynthia. Luckily, I have not, even though I spent a lot of time outdoors, I haven't been hit by the ticks yet. So again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Just reading a little bit from the Associated Press regarding the big topic on Friday's show. The Associated Press is reporting that the Trump administration is digging in on immigration amid the family separation crisis. And the AP is reporting, facing a rising tide of outrage from Democrats and some Republicans over the forced separation of migrant children and parents at the U.S.-Mexico border, President Trump dug in Monday, again falsely blaming Democrats for the escalating political crisis. Democrats have turned up the pressure over the policy, and some Republicans have joined the chorus of criticism. Former First Lady Laura Bush has called the policy cruel and immoral, while Republican Senator Susan Collins expressed concern about it, and a former Trump advisor questioned using the policy to pressure Democrats on immigration legislation. Trump continued to cast blame on Democrats Monday, tweeting this morning, "Why don't the Democrats give us the votes to fix the world's worst immigration laws?" And he went on to tweet, "Where's the outcry for the killings and crime being caused by gangs and thugs, including MS-13, coming into our country illegally?" And according to this AP report, Homeland Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen refused today to apologize for enforcing immigration laws that result in the separation of children from their parents. Speaking at a meeting of the National Sheriff's Association in New Orleans today, she rejected criticism, accusing DHS of inhuman and immoral actions. And then she goes on to say, "We're doing none of those things. We're enforcing the laws passed by Congress," she said, calling on Congress to reform immigration laws. Nearly 2,000 children were separated from their families over a six-week period in April and May of this year after Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced a new zero-tolerance policy that refers all cases of illegal entry for criminal prosecution. U.S. protocol prohibits detaining children with their parents because children are not charged with a crime and the parents are. Nielsen said that releasing parents with their children amounts to a get-out-of-jail-free card policy for those in the country illegally. And Trump asserted that women are being used by some of the worst criminals on earth as a way to enter the U.S. He tweeted this morning, "Has anyone been looking at the crime taking place south of the border, calling it historic?" The AP article goes on to say the administration pushed back amid rising criticism from both sides of the political aisle. In a guest column for the Washington Post Sunday, Mrs. Bush made some of the strongest comments yet from a Republican. She wrote, "I live in a border state. I appreciate the need to enforce and protect our international boundaries, but this zero tolerance policy is cruel. It is immoral, and it breaks my heart," she wrote. She compared it to the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II, which she called one of the most shameful episodes in U.S. history. And underscoring the emotional tension, the First Lady, Melania Trump, who has tended to stay out of contentious policy debates, waded into the issue. Her spokeswoman said that Mrs. Trump believes that we need to be a country that follows all laws, but also that governs with the heart. Mrs. Trump hates to see children separated from their families and hopes both sides of the aisle can finally come together to achieve successful immigration reform, spokeswoman Stephanie Grisham said. The signs of splintering GOP support came after longtime Trump ally, the Reverend Franklin Graham, called the policy disgraceful. Several religious groups, including some conservative ones, have pushed to stop the practice of separating immigrant children from their parents. Former Trump advisor Anthony Scaramucci said today on CNN that it doesn't feel right for the Trump administration to blame Democrats for separating parents and children at the southern border as a way of pressuring Democrats into negotiating on a Republican immigration bill. And Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine said she favors tight border security but expressed deep concerns about the child separation policy. We're going to get more on that in just a moment when we get the NPR news on, and then we're going to hear about that Supreme Court decision about gerrymandering, a decision that is sure to disappoint people that were hoping for some reform of gerrymandering in the country. If you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. We'll play those comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. And tomorrow we'll also be celebrating Juneteenth all day tomorrow on WMNF. Stay tuned for Sean Canaan and the candidates for congressional districts.